Welcome to Make Your Mark podcast, where guests share their experiences, insights, and tactics to help you accelerate your business. So building, scaling, and monetizing your business is made easier. And I'll be your host, Kay Suthar. Guys, welcome to another episode of Make Your Mark podcast. Now, I have a really awesome guest for you today. His name is Tim Butler. He's a seasoned marketing professional with more than two decades of experience in sales, marketing, and consulting. He is the founder and CEO of Innovation, a well-regarded marketing consultancy that has assisted clients across various sectors, including manufacturing, technology, healthcare, consumer products, finance, and professional services, comprehensive since its inception in 2014. His proficiency in digital marketing has earned him recognition, get this guys, from Google. He has been placed Innovation Visual among the top 30 digital agencies in the UK. So please welcome to the stage, Tim Butler. Oh my goodness, I'm so excited to have you here today.
Thank you, Kay. It's really great to be on here, to be joining all of your listeners and viewers.
Awesome, awesome. Now, I've got so many questions for you today around marketing and all that juicy stuff that as business owners, we need to be good at and know how to do. But before we get into all of that nitty-gritty, I would love for you to share with our audience today a little bit about your background, right? Some of the ups and downs you went through, because we all know success doesn't happen overnight.
I've been very fortunate with the career that I've had and the things that I've done, and I've been very lucky. I think that it's important, actually, to be a good business owner. You need to understand the world and you need to explore life. And so I've had some opportunities to actually do things like live abroad, mountain biking and things like that, which don't fit into the classic business manuals and things like that. But experiencing other cultures and experiencing life more widely actually helps you understand what's going on when it comes to making good business decisions. And I think the thing that I've learned over time is about making decisions is an absolute fundamental part of being a business leader. And if you think about a journey that any entrepreneurial business owners had, I think that the ups and downs are often punctuated by key decisions that you make. So the decision originally for me to leave my previous job, which was a well-paid job within another agency, and actually then decide at that point to take what I'd learned and what I'd known and go out and forge my own path, and then define separately, you know, what I wanted to do. And then there's another big punctuation mark where it's actually that choice of being, well, I can do this on my own, but I only really create a business, I only really create really significant value if I take on employees. And I think, you know, there were some ups and downs about that. And that was relatively new. I'd only managed relatively small teams up until that point in my career. And so, I think some of the decisions I made around recruitment, certainly early on in the business, weren't the best necessarily every time.
Okay, wow. Okay, you've already touched upon several things I want to be discussing with you here on this episode today. So you were working in corporate, is that correct?
Well, it was kind of like it was agency dealing with large corporates. So a number of different agencies, branding agency, pure play development agency, mixture dev, digital marketing agencies, as well as actually having started my own digital business back in, you know, all the way back in 98 99, and running that in parallel with my own job. So that was like what you would call a side hustle now.
So why did you come to a decision that you wanted to start your own business? Why don't you just stay in corporate?
Because I wasn't happy with what I was doing day to day. I was good at engaging with clients and prospects and understanding their problems and translating problems that they had, particularly around the digital space. That's the area where I've got so much specialism now, translating that into this is what you need to do and this is the plan and the action. But the problem was where I was at the time, I'd got so good at bringing the people in and saying this is what you should do that I then wasn't able to actually help them execute on that. So I was having to hand off constantly. And what I realized is the bit that I get very passionate about is solving people's problems. Hmm. And so the driver was, well, if I go out, and at that time it was on my own, not only will I be able to figure out what their problems are and create the plan, but I'm going to be able to then help them and see them through the execution, deliver the outcomes, deliver the results that they want. And that's kind of more professionally fulfilling, or certainly was at the time. And obviously, I still enjoy that now. It's the fundamental of what we do.
I love it. Now, I hear so many people in similar situations where they're working for somebody, they're in corporate, they want to build their own business, but they get stuck. First of all, they don't know what type of business or how to go about it or if it's the right move. And so with someone in that position, what would you advise them on?
Well, I would say that you shouldn't just leave to do a business if you don't know what the business is. Hmm. The problem with being your own boss is that they don't tell you how lonely and uncomfortable it is at points, particularly in the early days when it is just flying solo. Often entrepreneurship is presented as quite, you know, cool and funky or whatever, but there's an awful lot of grinding it out. And the difficulty is if you don't enjoy what you're then doing within that business, that grinding it out is even harder than it needs to be. So I didn't really set out to build what is now Innovation Visual in the scale that it is. The day I walked away from the salaried job and the comfortable lifestyle, if you like. But what I walked towards was, I really enjoy doing this. I feel that I can create something which will allow me to do this and it will allow me to pay the mortgage and pay the bills. And so start with what you are really engaged with and what you find professionally fulfilling. And I choose those words very carefully, not necessarily what you enjoy, because what I've also done in the past is I alluded to living out in the States and living in France. And I actually worked as a mountain bike guide in France. And that is doing what you love doing. But the problem is some of those jobs of doing what you love doing, and I love mountain biking, even still today, it's defined a lot of my life. But getting paid for it is a very different thing to doing it for fun, taking clients out. And also those jobs can often not pay very well. So be careful you don't get sucked into something like, well, I'm going to create this business around X because I really like this as my hobby. Yeah. You need to think about the business model. You need to think you can have things that you really enjoy as a passion and a hobby, but you can also have things you find very professionally fulfilling. Just be careful you don't muddle those up too much and end up going down the wrong route.
Right. Okay, I love that. Now, you mentioned earlier, right, about making good decisions, right? And I feel like this is a good place to kind of start this topic here, making good decisions, you know, making sure that it's the right business, that you're passionate about it. But there's so many people that I constantly hear, probably you too, that they even procrastinate making a decision, let alone a good decision. Right. And so how would you go about overcoming some of those? How did you overcome any of that?
I procrastinate potentially about doing things such as like, oh, I've got this proposal that I need to write and it's going to take me 4 hours and I would rather do something else. But procrastinating to make decisions is a different beast. If it's like, is it going to be green or yellow? You know, you need to understand, well, why am I making that decision? Do I have the right information? And it should be a choice. And if you're procrastinating because you don't believe in that you're making the right decision. You need to understand why you don't believe it. And there is always, people talk about things like, imposter syndrome. There's self-doubt. There's always going to be a degree of self-doubt. There's never a decision in business that is absolutely slam dunk. It's green. Life will be brilliant after you pick green. That's all, you know, it's the obvious choice. It's always, there's always a bit of risk to it. But I think that the job of a CEO founder is to constantly equip yourself with the knowledge so that when you make a decision, you can make it with confidence and in the timescale that's required. So you shouldn't necessarily wait to inform yourself of a trend or something which impacts your business until you need to make a decision on it. You need to understand what's going on around you so that if you need to make a decision that refers back to that knowledge, you've already got it, because it might be that somebody phones and you have to make that decision today. And if you've done nothing to equip yourself with that knowledge, then you're in a really difficult situation because you're not really deciding, you're more guessing.
Right. Okay, I see. All right. And so you mentioned also about hiring, right? And when you're in the beginning stages, hiring can be a challenge, right? First of all, it's, do I hire now or do I wait, right? When is a good time to hire? And then where do you find the right people? And then training them, like there's a whole bunch of things that come along with hiring someone. So what will be the first thing that you look at when it comes to hiring, and how do you know when you're ready?
If I may, I'll answer this in two different areas. So I'll answer this from the viewpoint of a marketing and then the viewpoint of a growth business and things. So from a marketing viewpoint, I'm seeing an awful lot, or I have seen an awful lot of, because of the impact of the pandemic and the drive to online, there was a big thing of hiring lots and lots of digital marketing people in-house. And I've actually seen now companies have realized that some of those hires were a mistake, because what you don't want to do is hire for a half a role. So, I'm going to take this person on because I've got about 4 hours a day of this kind of stuff and it's likely to stay 4 hours a day. Or what happens a lot in digital marketing is the smaller organizations, they hire one person and they expect them to be brilliant at all manners of different digital marketing. I'm going to drill into this in a bit more detail later on in the conversation. But somebody who's excellent at all different aspects of digital marketing, they're a unicorn. You know, they're very different types of activities and mindsets that you need for different areas of digital marketing. So when it comes to marketing hires, I think that the successful businesses that I see understand to actually use agencies and use people that they only need the time for and the expertise. Some of these things are transitory, and not bring in house. So going back, I talk about that you need to be quite reluctant in that area to hire, because you can spend a lot of money and end up wasting it.
Right.
But on the business growth front, really what you need to be thinking about with your hires is, who should you hire to free up your time to do things that are more valuable? So when you're first growing, you want to be able to delegate out the things that are lower value. Mm-hmm. So typically in a business, it's going to be the delivery of the service or the product, if you like. And if you're going to do that, actually sit down and break down. We use time trackers in the organization. We've used time trackers for probably almost since the outset. And I log my time. My time is being logged right now, right? So if we need to analyze, okay, well, what do we need to do to free up more of Tim's time to do more of the good stuff that he does and get rid of the other stuff? We can run a report and we can go, oh, Tim seems to be spending a lot of time now working on the finance and accounts. So maybe we should hire somebody in that area because that's the reason to do it. So work off evidence, not just like go for like, oh, well, I should go and get a salesperson now because that's what that's what I think I should do because that will grow my business. Well, if you're not spending much time on sales, you're not saving yourself much time. And I think one of the really good hires that I made at a sort of transitional point of the agency is we went from kind of, I suppose we were going from about 10 or 12 people up to the 20 plus people, was actually hiring an executive assistant for me. Literally somebody who would just, if I said this needs to be done, they would get it done or find a way for it to get done. Yeah. And in hindsight, that could have been an earlier hire because a good executive assistant can cover a lot of bases and will fill in a lot of gaps. And then afterwards, you can start recruiting for more key people within the business to take on larger areas. But you want to hire really good people, but you don't want to have a really good person that's underutilized because that's really inefficient.
Right. Sure. I love it. And so when you do start hiring, where's the best place to find those great people?
Well, if we knew that, we wouldn't need recruiters. It's going to depend on the hire because it really depends on your knowledge and who you are and where you are in your network. Mm. It could be that you're looking to scale what you do. I mean, I don't know. Say you're an estate agent and you've come out of working other estate agents and you know that you need another estate agent to work with you so you can do more of the business management stuff. Well, you probably know a bunch of estate agents because you've worked with them, so you go and hire somebody that you know. Hiring somebody that you know is good. You need to avoid hiring people that are your friends and your relatives.
Right, yes.
Because that leads to problems down the line. Mm-hmm. Friends of friends and relatives of friends, a bit more borderline. But you can, you know, places like LinkedIn are a good area for recommendation, but only ask the people that you trust for a recommendation to say, hey, I know that you know a fair bit about manufacturing. Do you know any really good production managers that might be looking for a job or something like that? That's the kind of thing. And then also, depending on your knowledge, you may need to, you know, you could post an ad on something like Indeed if it's relatively simple. But if you're hiring for somebody which needs to have specialist skills and you don't really necessarily understand that, a good recruiter is very valuable at that point because a good recruiter will understand if you describe the job that they're going to do and where they're going to fit in the organization. A good recruiter will translate that into, well, you need this kind of person with this level of experience who's done this kind of thing because they'll fit within your organization. I remember talking to a recruiter about hiring a HR manager into the organization. And they said that you probably should avoid hiring a HR manager from public sector because they'll be very procedural. They'll be very slow to move. You guys move at lightning speed. So I didn't know much about HR management. So when I was initially looking out for that, a good recruiter at that point was valuable. But then at the same time, there are other options depending on what you know and who you know.
I like it. And I really like the fact that you mentioned get recommendations, right? So use your own network, speak to your own network and get recommendations to kind of get you going with hiring people in the beginning stages. I really like that. That's something that I got used to doing because it just becomes easier, it's faster, it's people that you trust. It's just a quicker process because as business owners, we all like to be We all want to be, you know, a year ahead of where we are, right? We want to work really quickly, get things in place. And so I love that idea. Awesome. And so tell me a little bit about your actual agency, your marketing business, and how you help your clients.
Yeah. So Innovation Visual positions itself a bit differently to a lot of digital agencies. We see ourselves coming out the original bit about problem solving. We see ourselves as very much part of the organizations that we work with. So we're typically working with organizations that have between 2 and 12 people in their marketing teams. So we're not working with really big marketing organizations, and we're not typically working with small startups. We do, if they're ambitious and they're well funded, and we do have some, and we've really delivered like kind of hyper growth with some of those people. But typically, it's 2 to 12 people in the marketing team. And this all comes around about digital marketing is a complex area with a lot going on, and it's very different skills. And if you think about what you're doing with marketing and digital marketing, you're in a race. You're in a race to beat your competitors. It's not about, you know, being in the game. It's about winning. Because if you don't win the deal, you don't get the revenue. So let's not talk about coming second. Let's talk about being first loser. Nobody wants to be first loser. So marketing and the digital space, it's always been challenging, but digital's really moving rapidly. I mean, I started digital marketing before Google Ads was invented. I remember it coming along. Yeah, that's how old and fogey I am. I remember thinking 10 cents a click. Wow, that's a lot of money. That's going to be interesting. Now it's like $100 and something a click. I remember before paid search. I remember before social media. And I remember before where we are now with everything that's going on with these different channels. And because you've got all this complexity, you cannot expect to hire even like something like SEO. People dump SEO into a bucket. Oh, we need to be hiring organic search. We will hire a person to do SEO. But SEOs can, like, it means off-page stuff, so link building, digital PR. It means technical SEO, so you need to understand your coding, you need to understand site speed, you need to understand data structures. And then you've got content, and you've got, like, actually creating great content that's going to be engaging. And also, it's not just a matter of ranking. You actually want to get people to convert from it. So language and persuasion and things, right? So those are three very different kind of things. Why would you think that you can just go out and get one person? And so the analogy on digital marketing is, if you were running Mercedes AMG Formula One team, you wouldn't just go and get a bunch of like guys who work in garages in the country. Well, the you know, he can fix the aircon and he can fix the tires and he can do, you know, he knows engines and he knows gearboxes and stuff like that. They don't do that. They want to win, right? Yeah. So they have specialists in every single area, and they get these. So they have somebody who knows all about tire pressures and tire temperatures and things like that. They have somebody on the suspension, multiple people on different parts of the engine and things. So if you want to win in digital marketing and marketing, you need to have access to expertise in these different areas. Because if you want to smash it on YouTube, you need somebody who really knows about YouTube and video as a medium. Right. If you want to be really good with SEO, you're going to need somebody who's really good with the off page, somebody else with the skills on the technical, and somebody with the content skills. So innovation visual, if you like, is your expertise bank that our clients plug into as if it's part of their team. And then they go, yeah, okay, Tim, so you guys, what do we need to do here? And we'll help them. We can help them with the strategy all the way through to the tactical execution. And because we've got experts in all of these different areas, really good, well-paid, very experienced and very talented experts, they can have a few hours of this person's time to work on this part of marketing automation, and then somebody else helping them with their content strategy, and somebody else with the technical aspects of the website. And it's not a pre-packed, awful kind of SEO 2-day-a-month package where you get a blog and a landing page and some link crap. It's like we're part of your team, and sometimes you're going to need a whole load of stuff on your MarTech. Sometimes you're going to need more focus on paid or your organic. Sometimes you're going to, you know, we should be working on your CRO stuff and things like that, and the UX. And so what we see is our clients grow faster and beat their competition, and they do it at a lower cost point because they're not recruiting somebody where there's not really a job for them. Because even things like MarTech, like if you're implementing a system like HubSpot, which is fantastic, and I've been using HubSpot for years, and we're a platinum partner, and we do some really good stuff with them. The people that we get setting up and creating the great data structures and customizing the initial installs and stuff like that, those guys are great. And then the clients move on to actually needing the guys who are doing the kind of the activation, the campaign stuff. And they're different, right? So if you went out and if you said, I'm going to buy HubSpot and I'm going to do it all in-house, so I'm going to go and get a HubSpot person, you're either going to end up with somebody who is kind of generalist and is okay across implementations and usage, so they're okay, or you're going to get somebody who's really good at doing the implementations, they're really fantastic at that, and they're probably quite expensive, and then they're going to be bored. And they're not very good at doing the activations because they're really good at the setup. So you probably have them and they'll probably move on after 9 months because they'll think, oh, I don't want to do it. Or you'll have somebody who's really good at campaigns and activations, but the setup will always be rubbish because they didn't know how to do it. Right. So it's like, so some of these skills are like transitory because the setup skill is maybe a 6 to 9 month process of getting everything bedded in and optimizing it. Yet you see some companies thinking, oh, I'll recruit, it will be cheaper than an agency. It's like, it won't. It will cost you a lot more.
Yes, yes, agreed. Now, we have people at all different levels as our audience, right? People that are starting up, people are midway, people are experts and been doing business for years. So how would you advise the new person that just started out the business? There's all these different pathways of marketing. Which option, which strategy should they pick first?
Okay, so they'll be disappointed to know that there's not one thing that I'm going to say, go do this and everything will be great. We need to go back to marketing basics, right? Okay. What we want to do is we want to get the right message to the right person at the right time. So think about who it is that you want to talk to. So we were talking earlier on today, we've just been doing some workshop and stuff, and one of the ICPs, the ideal client profiles, was actually people that run truck dealerships, right? Huh. So where are the people that run truck dealerships? There's about 2,000 truck dealerships in the country. Where are they going to be? Because that should be defining what you do for your marketing. So they're not on LinkedIn. They might be reading the truck magazines. What are they, you know, are they going on TikTok? They're probably not going on TikTok, but you can't say TikTok's not a great platform because you might be saying, well, actually, we've got this new gizmo for teenagers. Wow, ooh, TikTok's the channel. Yeah. So the point being is somebody starting up who wants to get the message across needs to think very carefully about who their audience is, where they are, and are they going to be in the right mindset to listen to what they're going to say. Now, I still believe search, primarily if you can get it organic search, but if you can't paid search, is really, really important for a growth business, because by definition, the person is searching for what you're doing. So you need to pick your keywords really carefully. You need to get the right intent. Don't just chase volume. But say you want to sell, I don't know, cleaning for truck dealerships, right? Well, your search term might be cleaners for truck dealerships, just being obvious about what it is, right? If that's what you want to do, if you appear in the search, when the guy who runs the truck dealership searches for it, there you are. That's why organic search is such a powerful driver of revenue online, not just traffic, but actual revenue. And don't the flip side is don't get distracted by the shiny things. So when somebody says, oh, you should be on because they have loads of viewers, or, you know, TikTok's just put out this thing about how it's like a really big search engine now for people. That's fine. They might be searching for how to make pancakes. Now, if you sell industrial valves, who gives a monkeys about people searching, you know, on TikTok for that? It comes back to where your people are. And I'll shut up in a moment on this, but final thing, particularly for young companies and startups, early phase, go narrow, go really, really laser pointed, go narrow, and when you hit the target, start to widen out. Don't do what some of the agencies recommend, which is throw loads of money at us. And then when we figure it out, then you can decide on that 1% of all the money you've given us actually gave some result. You can double down on that. That's kind of like the, that's the way that if you've got loads of money, you can afford to experiment. Young businesses can't afford to do that. Put the thinking in, put in the hard work, figure it out. You can do little tests, but narrowly focus and make sure you understand who your ICP is, your ideal client profile, what it is that you're solving for them, and just go after that relentlessly. Sorry,
No, I like it. So you mentioned about the, you know, shiny object syndrome, right?
Yeah.
So what are your thoughts when it comes to marketing, when it comes to AI, because everybody is all over AI right now.
Yeah. I wouldn't say AI is a shiny thing. AI is transformational underlying technology, right? I had a conversation with my dad a few months ago. He was like, what's, you know, he's getting on a bit. What's all this stuff about AI? And everybody's talking about the world's going to change with AI. And I said, no, it will. Generative artificial intelligence, because we've had AI around for quite a long time, but this generative artificial intelligence, which actually creates things from prompts and things like that, this is like the next industrial revolution, but it's going to happen faster. So, you know, it's going to absolutely change the way people do things. It's for certain jobs and certain roles, it's going to be terrifying. It's going to change society as well, not necessarily for good. I mean, I was in Web Summit, the big digital conference, you know, 70,000 people in Lisbon in November. Obviously, loads of talk about generative AI, but it was interesting. Some of the keynote speakers, they're talking about AI having a massive impact. And when people are asked, well, how much of this is good and how much of this is bad? Most of the answers say most of it will be bad because it's so easily used by bad actors. Now, that's not a marketing necessary thing. That's a societal thing because of industrial level, you know, being able to industrialize false information and things like that. Right. But from a marketing perspective, it's it's, don't see it as a shiny thing. See it as the underlying, the engine behind the thing. Just like electricity powers your computer, AI is like a thing powering applications and things on top of that. So you're gonna have to use it, because if you don't, you'll get left behind.
Right.
But use it wisely. There's places that we use it. It's really good because there's two big impacts. There's efficiency, so we can do more for less cost, but there are also performance improvements as well. So tools are getting things embedded. So you can have things like Elasticsearch in terms of AI powered. So it will understand and use machine learning to return different products based on previous behaviors from the learning model, because it's machine learning, it's learning. So you should get better results financially if you're using a tool that can do basically more calculations than a human can do at scale, kind of thing. So I think it's amazing in terms of the transformation that it will bring, but you need to be careful. Like just creating content with ChatGPT and banging out blog posts which have just been created on ChatGPT, it's just drivel. Like. There's no value in that. Why are people coming to your site going to see value in stuff that's been created? And I think a lot of people also don't understand what some of these artificial intelligence tools are actually doing. Like large language models understand what word to put after the last word to make all the string of words make sense. But you get this thing called AI hallucination where it literally makes stuff up. It reads and it looks like it makes sense, but it makes stuff up. Like the head of computing at Newcastle University, he uses the example that he asked AI for the titles of five maths books for undergraduates.
Right.
And ChatGPT came back with five maths books by professor this, doctor that, or whatever, about pure maths. Every single one of them was made up, but they all had plausible names, titles, and names behind them.
Oh, wow.
But every single one was made up because it's a language model. It's not a research model. It's not Google analyzing the web and saying, well, this is what I found. It's a language invention model. And I think that if you're going to use AI tools, you should equip yourself with the knowledge to actually understand what they are doing and not just, you know, take the content and the output and take it as rote. So, yeah, it's a really interesting time.
Wow. Oh, my goodness. So many golden nuggets in such a short amount of time, Tim. That is amazing. Now, I know at this point people are thinking, oh, my goodness, how do I connect with Tim, right? Because they've probably got people got loads of questions to ask you. They probably want to hire you to help them with their marketing. So where can people go to connect with you?
Best thing to do is to go to innovation.com, so innovation visual or one word.com, which is the AI website. There's all manner of different details on there, obviously, whether it be the phone number, the classic or fill out forms. But also the other thing is you can get more, if you like the conversation that we've been having, there's more content of this nature on our Digital Marketing Answered podcast, which is on YouTube and on all the podcast platforms and things. So people can go there. Hopefully, Kay, you'll be able to put some contact details. You can put my LinkedIn contact details on the show notes for here as well. Absolutely. So people can contact that way. But yeah, I love to hear from people. And it's good when we do podcasts and when I'm lucky enough to appear on podcasts like yours. I do get questions asked and I do get feedback and it's really great to interact with people who are listening and getting value.
Absolutely. Now, guys, if you've missed anything, all the details will be in the show notes. So make sure you scroll down and get hold of those details. Go ahead and connect with Tim. Go check out the website. Get on a call with him. Connect with him because I no doubt know that he's going to be able to help you with your marketing strategies and business. Tim, thank you so much for coming onto the show. And like I said, so many golden nuggets in such a short amount of time.
Thank you, Kate. It's been an absolute pleasure. And thank you for those people who have been listening.
Thanks for listening to Make Your Mark podcast at www.makeyourmarkpodcast.com. Make sure you hit that subscribe button so you get this and every other episode that comes out. We have lots of great stuff coming, so make sure you hit subscribe so you don't miss it. And thank you in advance for all the reviews and comments. I appreciate it so much. And I look forward to serving you in next week's episode.